This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
I think that this is a sign of things to come, is that a lot of the companies are saying, hey, it doesn't make sense to be environmentally irresponsible, and it doesn't cost us any more if we're careful about it. And so that's really the big change that I've seen.
A couple of months ago here at Sea Change Radio, we discussed socially responsible investing, or SRI, from a global perspective with South African financial expert Graham Sinclair. This week, we take a look at the American SRI movement. I speak with industry pioneer Jerome Dodson, the founder of both Parnassus Investments and Working Assets, along with Aaron Weiner, a Bay Area investment advisor who specializes in finding his clients socially responsible investment vehicles. We discuss the roots of the SRI industry, some of the innovations taking place today, and how the new political reality of American democracy in the Citizens United era is changing how we should all view the companies we invest in and support. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Aaron Weiner. He's the president and founder of Milestone Financial Advisors in the Bay Area. Aaron, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thank you very much, Alex.
What percentage would you say of your clients invest in socially responsible investment vehicles?
Of the clients that I work with, I would say about a third or possibly 40% of them are interested in or actively investing in SRI products, mutual funds that invest in socially responsible type of mutual funds.
And how has that evolved over the last, how long have you been doing this?
I've been doing this for about 12 or 13 years, and I would say that it's evolved fairly slowly up until about 3 or 4 years ago, when it became a much more glamorous or popular or important thing for a lot of investors to look seriously at. In fact, to the point where I believe it was in 2009 or 2010, there was a study done that showed that one out of every $8 that is being invested by individual investors is going into SRI products, which was a big jump from 2005-2006.
What was that attributed to?
I think it was attributed to information, financial advisors like myself who were promoting it, a trend toward more conscientious investing among the population, and also most likely performance, where you could expect similar, if not better performance, certainly no worse performance in socially screened mutual funds than in non-socially screened mutual funds.
Of your clients, what percentage would you say are interested in investing in companies that have values that they're aligned with, as opposed to mutual funds that purport to invest in green or socially responsible investment?
It's almost entirely mutual funds, because investing in a specific company would require a lot more research, a lot more due diligence, and frankly, that's the job of the fund manager, not necessarily the financial advisor who's providing recommendations on mutual funds to their clients. So there's so many different types of SRI mutual funds available now that if a client came to me and said, I would like to make sure that my investments screen out the following list of industries, that could be alcohol, tobacco, could be gaming, could be animal testing, these types of things, then it's very easy for me as their advisor to find those mutual funds. Whereas if they asked me to invest in a group of companies that were conscientious about those matters, it would be much more difficult for me to do.
What kind of ESG factors, environmental, social, governance factors, would a money manager, a fund manager look for generally? Or what should they be looking for? And how does a financial advisor like yourself then filter that out to to give sound advice to your clients?
Sure. I think, Alex, it's really part of a process where we begin with a advisor-client discussion or relationship and trying to determine to what extent do we want to align the individual's values with their investments. And if we determine that they do want to invest toward their values, we can then fine-tune that. And if it turns out that their values are all around the environment or alternative, the promotion of alternative energy sources, then what I can do is I can look specifically at mutual funds, which I probably couldn't name right now, but I could go out and look for mutual funds that had that degree of specificity. In other words, they're granular enough that we know here's five mutual funds and all they do is look for ways to screen out the companies that promote environmental degradation and screen in the companies that promote alternative energy, meaning that they find companies that are investing in alternative energy. So once that part of the process is done, it's just a matter of picking the product.
This is Alex Wise on SeaChange Radio. I'm speaking with Aaron Weiner. He's the president and founder of Milestone Financial Advisors, and we're talking about socially responsible investing. You've mentioned how you've seen the evolution of socially responsible investing, particularly in the last 3 or 4 years. Has it also changed the nature of who's investing in general?
It hasn't increased the amount of individuals who are becoming investors, but it's certainly brought a new dimension of investing to the vast majority of investors, and some of whom are going to be interested in that type of investing.
Aaron, what are some of the new areas of socially responsible investing that you're excited about?
What I'm excited about in the area of SRI right now is the greater, much greater involvement of individual shareholders of companies in an effort to make those companies more responsive. And two of the ways that that happen are community investment mandates and greater amounts of shareholder resolution that push those types of changes.
Aaron Weiner, the president and founder of Milestone Financial Advisors. Thanks so much for being my guest on SeaChange Radio.
Thanks for having me, Alex.
You can spend all your time making money, yeah. You can spend all your love making time. If it all fell to pieces tomorrow, would you still be mine? Oh, when you're looking for freedom, nobody's in the door. You can't find the door.
You can't find it anywhere.
There's nothing to believe in.
To listen to SeaChange Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
I'm joined today by Jerome Dodson. He is the founder of Parnassus Investments. Jerry, welcome to SeaChange Radio.
Thank you very much, Alex. It's a pleasure to be here.
Your firm, Parnassus, has been at the forefront of the socially responsible investment industry for several decades. Can you walk us back a little bit to the genesis of your firm and how it was hand-in-hand with SRI?
Early on, let's say in the late 70s, early 80s, the socially responsible investment movement was, shall we say, in embryo form. And there weren't many people investing their money this way because the concern was that if you took social and environmental aspects into investing, you would get lower returns. And there were a lot of the media wrote articles about this point. And we were saying, hey, this doesn't necessarily follow. We think that, in fact, if you invest in companies that are more socially and environmentally positive, responsible, in that situation, you could do at least as well as a regular investment. And that's really what happened during that early period. Now, it's 30 years later, And I think it's become accepted that companies that are good places to work, that take environmental responsibility seriously, are actually probably going to do better than the regular companies. So it's 30 years has been a lot of changes.
What was the environment like 30 years ago when you were trying to sell potential customers on the value of socially responsible investment tools?
The potential investors would always ask me about the things they had read in the media, that if you exclude certain companies, you're going to exclude your universe of investable alternatives. And they would say, doesn't this mean that you're absolutely going to get lower returns? And I would say, no. I said, there's plenty of investments out there. There's plenty of companies that are socially responsible and that you're going to get a pretty good return. And I convinced some of them, but it took a long time. And a lot of them were never convinced. So in terms of the growth, we've just had huge growth in recent years. To give you an idea, we started in the end of 1984 with only $330,000, very small. A year later, we had $1.3 million. 2 years later, we had $3.5 million. So they were pretty small growth. Currently, all the Parnassus funds have almost $6 billion. And in one day, we take in much more than we took in years. And we'll take in, you know, millions every day. And of course, back in those days, we'd take in millions every year. So it's a big difference. And people have come to realize that, hey, investing this way makes a good impact. We can get good returns, but you know, we're really supporting companies that are environmentally and socially responsible.
What kind of landmark timeline issues does the socially responsible investment community look to as these were the ones that brought us into the big league, so to speak?
I don't think there was any one event that did that. All I can say is the difference between, say, the middle 80s, late 70s, early 80s, and moving into the 90s, let's say by the middle 90s, there was a huge difference. So for example, when I would go out to visit companies and I would go to analyst meetings or annual meetings and I would ask questions that had a social or environmental aspect, early on, a lot of the companies said, well, why are you asking questions like this? Why are you asking if we're a good place to work? Why are you asking if we take environmental responsibility seriously? That's what I'd say, why are you doing that? That would be the reaction. Starting in the mid-90s, I got no pushback from the companies on those issues. If we would ask them a question like, well, putting a woman on the board or putting more women into management positions, they would say, hey, that's a legitimate question. We're working on it. Here's what we're doing, which is completely different than, hey, why are you asking that question? So I'm not sure what happened. It's just that from the middle 80s to the middle 90s, there was a big difference in consciousness of the society and especially business as a whole.
Before that, it was always just bottom line, dollars and cents, kind of balance sheets questions generally?
Exactly. The companies that we asked those questions to would say, well, why is that important? You're supposed to be, in fiduciaries. You're supposed to be making money for your shareholders. What is important to you on these other issues, these social and environmental issues? Why is that of interest to you?
Can you think of any anecdotes from back then when there was, you don't have to name names of companies if you don't want, but some red flags which sent off a trigger saying, you know what, maybe we should not be investing in this company?
Usually, if you start talking to the company and they give you a lot of pushback or they aren't honest with you, you get a feeling whether this company is going to be socially responsible or not. It's not the only thing, but usually if they're reluctant to answer these type of questions, we don't invest in those companies. Let me just give you an example. I will give you one example. A company called Waste Management. In the 80s and even in the early 90s, waste management was a real problem. And you would think that, well, if you're handling the waste responsibly, that's a huge idea. If you're recycling, if you're making sure that toxic waste doesn't pollute the environment, it's such a big opportunity. And there were even some social investment funds that would invest in waste management in those days saying, well, you know, they're
managing waste. That's in their name.
Exactly. They were terrible. The Environmental Protection Agency cited them again and again. State and local governments, they were just about the worst you could get. Unbelievable. You know, they would dump their waste in landfills, and there would be toxic waste in there that they wouldn't handle properly. It would seep into the groundwater, would get into the air. Just a terrible company. And they had a management change in the 90s. And I was just amazed at the difference there was, say, the last 10, 12 years from where they were, say, 25 years ago. It was a big difference. And in terms of much more emphasis on recycling, they wouldn't dump the toxic waste into landfills anymore. They were very careful how they did it. It's a big difference. So right now, we have waste management in the portfolio. We think they're an environmentally responsible company. So there is hope that they can change over time. And I think that this is a sign of things to come, is that a lot of the companies are saying, hey, it doesn't make sense to be environmentally irresponsible, and it doesn't cost us anymore if we're careful about it. And so that's really the big change that I've seen.
If you are the head of one of these bigger companies and you wanted to appeal to a Parnassus Investments, what kind of strides could you make? Should you give more of your profits away? Should you slice up your company? What's the best alternative for some of these behemoths of business at this point?
I think a company like Costco is doing a very good job. The reason why is, number one, they pay health benefits to all their employees, which is very important. They pay living wages. I like the quality of the products they have. So a company like Costco, I think, has really demonstrated that, and that's currently in our portfolio. Another one that would be in that category would be Target. They give a lot to their local communities. In fact, some years they donate 5% of their net profits to community organizations. They're always supporting things. Their employees are volunteering. They're encouraged to donate. They donate themselves. I just think they're really a quality company. And so we would invest in the Costco's. We would invest in the Targets, but at this point, not yet in the Walmarts.
You were the founder of Working Assets.
Yes.
Before it changed several times over decades into what we have today as Credo Mobile, which is a mobile phone company with a social conscience, and they wear their politics on their sleeve. They can't legally endorse candidates, but they get behind issues and they get behind non-profit organizations and donate to them. Why haven't we seen more companies with this kind of model, not only from an ideological standpoint, but also from the potential appeal to people who, we talk about a divided America a lot of times. Why aren't there more companies taking a stand between red and blue?
I think that most companies don't really want to get into politics.
Is it kind of like Michael Jordan said, Republicans buy Nikes too?
Right. I think that's a good quote. And I think that most companies don't want to say, hey, I don't want to be perceived as left wing or right wing either way. I really want to be perceived as apolitical, of having good quality products. And because of Credo Mobile's, very pronounced viewpoint on issues, they're perceived as being a left organization. And as you know, the minority of people in the United States are left, or even right for that matter. And I think that the people don't want to have a backlash being perceived either left-wing or right-wing, because that would really reduce the universe of people that can buy their products.
With the Supreme Court passing Citizens United last year, as we're seeing in this 2012 election cycle, the playing field has changed, and now companies are behind the scenes funneling money into candidates and issues that they feel passionate about. They just don't wear it on their sleeve like a Credo Mobile may.
That's right. They do it, and it's not an issue until it shows up in the campaign contributions. But a lot of them have taken some negative publicity. And I think a lot of them are thinking through, hey, do we really want to make these kind of political contributions? And I think they're thinking that more and more. Credo does it publicly, and most of the companies, if they make campaign contributions, are done, sotto voce. They, quietly put the money into a PAC or into a candidate.
Can you cough it up? loud and strong. The immigrants, oh, they want to sing all night long. And it could be anywhere, most likely could be any frontier, any hemisphere. It's no man's land, no man, no man's land. And there ain't no asylum here. King Solomon, dude, never lived around here. Go straight to hell. Go straight to hell, boy. Go straight to hell.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/SeaChangeRadio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking with the founder of Parnassus Investments, Jerome Dodson. Jerry, can you give us a quick overview of Parnassus Investments today, a snapshot of how much money you manage and what your different funds are all about?
We have six funds. And together, they have about $6 billion in assets. Five of them are equity funds, meaning we invest in stocks. And one of them is a bond fund, so invest in fixed income or bonds. And so the ones that probably most interest you are the five that are the equity funds. We've got one that's an equity income fund, which means it invests in companies that stocks pay dividends. Then we have one, a small cap, one that invests in companies with small market capitalizations of below $3 billion. We've got a mid cap, which invests in companies with market capitalizations between $3 and $20 billion. Then we have the Parnassus Fund, which can invest in any size of company. And then we have one called the Parnassus Workplace Fund. And that takes environmental and other social factors into account, but its special emphasis is companies that are great places to work. And that, interestingly enough, has had the best performance of any of our stock funds. And that's, I think, shows that companies that are good places to work are really good investments.
Do you think the success of your workplace fund will spill over into influencing other, your small cap, your mid cap, and funds of other firms?
We take workplace issues into account for our small and mid cap funds as well. But it's just that the bar is higher for our workplace fund than for the other funds. I think in general, the ones in our small and mid-cap funds, they're good places to work too, but they don't have quite of all the benefits or all the opportunities that some of the larger companies do that are in the workplace fund.
In the industry in general, are there ever any standards to the people and the organizations that can invest in these SRI funds? So for example, if BP wanted to take a large percentage of your workplace fund as large investors, let's say it's a $1 billion fund, they wanted to put $500 million into that fund, would that be something that you would be aware of and would want to stop or could stop? How does that work? Or is it not a factor?
Yes, we do have the right to deny investors to any entity. So we can block someone from investing in our fund. Usually, though, it's not because we don't like the person that's investing. It's usually because if they are short-term investors and they come in and they say they move in with, say, $50 million, and then 3 months later they move out, that wreaks havoc with the fund because it's hard to keep a long-term focus when you have that going on. So that's usually the only reason we bar people from the funds is because it's hot money coming in.
So they're like using it as a tool to flip money or like corporate raider like
right.
Attitude.
That's right, yes.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking with the founder of Parnassus Investments, Jerome Dodson. How is it good for the companies that are invested in your workplace to tout themselves as being part of the Parnassus family of funds?
Usually it's better for the companies, not necessarily because we invest in them, but because they follow certain principles that we use as well. So for example, let's take a company like The Gap. Years ago, we had some real issues with The Gap. In fact, we had to meet with them several times. And it was because of the contractors that actually made the clothes that were sold by The Gap were suspected of abusing their employees. In many cases, were in fact abusing their employees, either not paying them a living wage or the working conditions were not acceptable. And we went and met with The Gap and asked them about these issues. And to their credit, they actually listened to us. They didn't, you know, kick us out right away. And we went in and talked with The Gap, and they said, hey, you know, you're right. And so we went with a program whereby they did audits of all their contractors to see, you know, are they being paid fairly? Are the conditions good? And so Gap has gone from being questionable in that area to being a really good company. That doesn't mean that all the contractors are perfect. But when they have these audits, they catch these problems, and they're very open about it. They're very transparent, which I like. So Gap would be a good company today, whereas, you know, 20 years ago, it would be on the questionable list.
And since you manage close to $6 billion in assets, are you finding that you have more weight to actually influence the behavior of top management at some of your more high-profile firms that you invest in?
Absolutely. I think having the weight that we have with the asset size, the companies want us to invest in their stock. And if we go to them with issues, they're usually pretty responsive.
Jerry, as a longtime observer and participant in the socially responsible investment world, what are some of the issues you think the public will become more aware of in terms of corporate behavior down the road?
One issue people have been talking about recently has been what's called fracking, which is hydraulic fracturing. It's how you explore for natural gas. And as most people know, natural gas is a much more positive source of fuel than, say, coal or gasoline, because it burns cleanly and it doesn't put emissions in the environment. So it's very positive from a social environmental standpoint. However, in the process of doing this fracking, where you crack open shale rock to get the natural gas, sometimes what you use to open it up, it has water, but it also has chemicals. And what is the impact of that? What is the safety issue? And I think that we really have to start thinking through that, because there's a lot of unanswered questions about what fracking is going to do with natural gas. So I think that should probably be a bigger and bigger issue as time goes on.
We're starting to see not only the chemicals, but the effect on seismic shifts. And they just attributed all these small earthquakes in Ohio to the expansion of fracking in that state.
Yes, that's another good point. You're right, is that what's going to happen with the seismic shift in there? What is the effect on the earth of doing the fracking? And of course, everybody wants to have more domestic sources of fuel, especially clean sources like natural gas. But really, you have to say, okay, what is the impact of this, and what can we do to make sure that the impact is not negative?
Jerome Dodson of Parnassus Investments. Jerry, thanks so much for being my guest on SeaChange Radio.
Thank you very much, Alex. It's a pleasure being here.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to SeaChange Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Mark Ribot, Etta James, and Phil Cody. SeaChange Radio is made possible by support from Farm Fresh to You Organic Produce Delivery Service, connecting people to farms and leading the progressive change in America's food system. To learn more, go to farmfreshtoyou.com. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to SeaChange Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For SeaChange Radio, I'm Alex Wise.